The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
It's News Talk. It's the Anton Savage Show. With me is Valerie Cox, author and journalist, and Kevin Doyle, Irish Independent Executive Editor. And we begin with the continuing saga that is the speaking rights row. And of course, now the question is whether or not the Ciarán Cóirleagh is going to remain in her position. I think the smart money would say she almost certainly is. But nonetheless, the question is there. And the Daily Mail has an analysis which says that the biggest beneficiary in all of this is Lowry and his group because of the way the speaking rights solution is going to wash out. Can you explain all this, Kevin?
I can try.
Okay.
So every time we think this story is running out of steam, we find a new way of discovering that it's even better for Michael Lowry than we thought it was before. And so both the Mail, Craig Hughes and the Mail and Tabitha Mona and the Independent have been digging into what exactly these new rules, which were voted through during the week. People seem to have missed that it actually got done despite all the shouting. And what it turns out, Anton, it seems that this new slot, the famous 8 minutes that threatened democracy, as Micheál Martin framed it, the time for those 8 minutes is going to be split between Fianna Fáil backbenchers, Fine Gael backbenchers and the Independent Lowry group evenly. So what I mean by that is there are 30 backbenchers in Fianna Fáil, non-ministers if you like. There are 23 in Fine Gael. And then there are the seven others, if you like, who are supporting the government or on the fringes, at least. And it's going to be split evenly between the three groups.
So 53 people will get half the time and seven will get half the time.
Yes, basically. And this seems to have been something that those in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were not aware of as they were pushing this through during the week. And now, while there isn't a whole lot of people on the record, it's quite clear that I think there's an annoyance gathering. There's plenty of people being quoted off the record saying this is BS, for want of a better phrase. And I'm not surprised, because this tallies with everything that the opposition have been saying all week and that Micheál Martin has been denying, which is that this was a stroke to facilitate Michael Lowry.
And it seems now that the only people who weren't annoyed at this are now annoyed. There is pretty much nobody left in the Dáil who isn't aggrieved in some way about all this deal.
Except Michael Lowry.
Indeed. And possibly Verona Murphy, depending on how this week goes. Do we think Verona Murphy is going to remain in position, Valerie?
Well, that's very interesting, because there is plenty of stuff in the papers this morning, including that article you mentioned by Tabitha Monaghan about, you know, other people who have been in this position, who have looked at in different ways and so on. But one of the things that she raised, which I thought was interesting, was that a lot of TDs are afraid to voice their unhappiness at these arrangements because it could wreck their chances of getting a place on the Oireachtas committees. Now, I mean, that's just an awful way to have our TDs, that they have to be thinking, oh, I can't open my mouth because this could go against
me. Was it ever thus though, Valerie, surely?
Well, I don't know. You had a few outspoken people who didn't care. But if you look back, probably most of them were independents anyway, you know. But, you know, the opposition are united in this motion of no confidence. But this interesting piece by Padraig Byrne, he looked back at some of the other former TDs, Brendan Howland, who was the former Labour Party leader, and he's from Wexford as well. Now, he was last Ciarán Cóirleagh in 2009, and he said she's in a very difficult position. Walking away would not be her style. And then Ivan Yates put in his tuppence halfpenny worth, and he said she'll last as long as the government. But I think one of the biggest problems is that Verona Murphy is wrecking her base in Wexford, because she doesn't really get the role of Ciarán Cóirleagh. And she did an interview there where she was talking about how she would now, as Ciarán Cóirleagh, have access to every minister and she would have influence over government policy. Well, that's not the job she's got. You can't do that. So her constituency...
Well, by definition, it is the opposite of the job
exactly.
She has. She is not allowed to have any influence on anything.
Not at all. So I don't think she gets that. And her constituency is divided on that. Now, of course, if she survives to the end of her term, then she comes back again, which is very useful in the constituency.
This is because she's automatically elected without a vote.
Comes back, you know.
So if she doesn't survive the vote, which we assume she does, do we know what happens then? Is there a new Ciarán Cóirleagh appointed, or does John McGuinness get the big job?
No, we'd go back to a secret vote. We'd have to come up with a new... and I presume John McGuinness would be the first one with his hand up for that. But there were several people that contested at the time. And it's a secret vote. So it could go any way at this stage, because as we're talking about there, there's now so much disquiet within the government parties over how all of this was handled.
Does the fact of it being a secret vote allow people the freedom to vote outside the whip, or would
absolutely
that be?
This is the one time in the Dáil that people can actually vote for somebody from somewhere else. And we see it. If you go back and look at the numbers, they never tally exactly, even when Seanna For Real was getting the job, they never tally exactly with the party numbers. So people do go in different directions and people have their favours. And people have political reasons for wanting one person in over a different person. And it might be things like, well, they're a threat to me as a committee chair, so it'd be handy to get them off the pitch as a Ciarán Cóirleach type thing. They are the machinations that happen when you have the power of secrecy.
So is there an outside possibility then that they might lose the vote?
I don't think so. No. They will circle the wagons on this. They will keep her there. It's quite bizarre, because I naively thought a few days ago when this was being threatened that if she lost half the Dáil or close to it as it is, that she would have to resign, because that would be, if you're the referee, Kildare and Offaly are playing in the league final tomorrow, and if the referee come out wearing the Kildare jersey, the Offaly fellas refuse to go on the pitch, well, there's no game. And that's the kind of picture we're facing here, is that the opposition at least believe she's wearing a government jersey. So how can you referee a game? And
we've
she's
lost
got a power
on that basis before, haven't we? Where once a significant, if I remember, was it Eamon Gilmore expressed a lack of confidence in the Ciarán Cóirleach that led to a resignation?
Yeah, and John O'Donoghue. John O'Donoghue didn't face the no confidence. It was coming, but he resigned before it got there. Because once you get into that space, it's not like a minister. You know, a government will generally stand by a minister unless they have done something horrendous. And we see that time and time again. This is very different, because this is no confidence in the referee.
Is she permanently damaged by this, Valerie? Or if she survives the vote, can she return to sort of...
No, I think she's definitely damaged. This woman was a very successful businesswoman. She was president of the Irish Hauliers Association. And you would imagine that somebody with that political experience could glide in and do a beautiful job of orchestrating people. But I mean, that's gone
tough
up
crowd.
In smoke. It's not even just that they're a tough crowd, not at all. It's just that she let them away with it. She couldn't control them. And when you're putting somebody into that position, you want somebody who's going to be tough, who doesn't listen to the rubbish who's going on, and who can say, stop talking, or, you know, I'll give you 5 minutes recess or whatever. And they obey her. But they didn't. They were absolutely appalling.
But I think in advance, anybody, if you had listed all of the Dáil TDs and said, who would be most likely to be able to enforce order, Fiona Murphy would have been at the top of a lot of people's lists.
I disagree, actually,
no.
Because the job of the Ciarán Cóirleach is to be almost anonymous. And in her entire political career, Fiona Murphy has never been anonymous. So, like, Seanna For Real is a relatively quiet character. Okay, we see him getting up, banging the bell, telling everyone to sit down. You should never be, I'll go back to the referee analogy again. The referee should never be the front page picture, the back page picture of the sports on a Monday morning. Should just never be that, because if you are, you've done something wrong, you've become the centre of attention. And the Ciarán Cóirleach is exactly like that. The Ciarán Cóirleach should never be in the news.
But will people not say she had no choice? She was put in a position where the opposition had found a wonderful political toy in the form of the speaking rights debate, and that they were going to make this spectacle, and her attempt to try to control them was always going to end up on the front page.
No, she was the wrong person. And if you look back at her election campaign, her slogan was local and vocal. But, you know, she built her reputation, this according to Padraig Byrne in the Indo, she built a big reputation shouting down the government, and now she needs it to help save her job. So, you know, she just doesn't have what it takes to be a Ciarán Cóirleach who can do it quietly and professionally.
Now, the one thing I'll say in her defence, so we're not completely dumping on her, if she survives, as we expect she survives this, she has 4 years to grow into that job. And we may be having a very different conversation come the next election. We may be talking about her getting a second term, because that's a long time to learn the mechanics of this and to calm down a bit and to bring some order. So
whatever,
it's not
then,
all is not lost for her.
Whatever then about the damage done to the Ciarán Cóirleach, who are the winners and losers in the totality of this? Has the opposition done well from it? Has the government done badly? Is it a plague on all your houses? Where do you think this stands with the electorate?
I think it sits in the plague on all your houses at this stage, because I think everyone has done wrong here. I think you can have conflicting views on this, which people find very hard to accept nowadays in political debate. But it is entirely possible to believe that the government pulled a stroke. And it is entirely possible to believe at the same time that the opposition handled it appallingly. And I think that's what has happened here. So I think it is a plague in all your house. I think generally the public probably side a
How
little bit
they handle
more
it appallingly?
That shouting and stopping. Like the threat to democracy we saw this week was the opposition shutting down our parliament over 8 minutes, as Micheál Martin says. I know they'll argue the intricacies of it. But they stopped our parliament doing work. Our committees have not been formed. They don't like it, but the government has a majority. The people will decide if they don't like it in four, five years' time. That's how governments work. So they shut down parliament. If they can do it over speaking rights, they can do it over anything.
But is that not in and of itself democracy?
No, because democracy is based on votes. You have disagreements, you have votes, you accept majority rule. They didn't accept majority rule here.
But that's to suggest that there is no party whip system. There is a real politic, which is that if you want issues to get into the public discourse and you need papers like yours to put it on the front pages, you need shows like ours to cover it. And the only way you do that is by creating spectacle, which they did beautifully. That's how democracy works.
Well, you of course, you can argue it both ways until the cows come home.
Consider where they were. But I mean, they were in the Dáil chamber. And
the world is on fire, Anton.
There has to be a certain amount of respect for both Verona's job and for the Dáil itself. Whereas what did we have? We had people filming in the Dáil. We had two fingers from Michael Lowry. I mean, that is not acceptable behaviour in the first chamber. It really isn't, you know.
And I think possibly the mood may have swung back a little bit to the government on the back of those scenes, right up to the point where Michael Lowry gave two fingers, and then it swung right back. Micheál Martin must want to absolutely wring Michael Lowry's neck this weekend, because he was trying to put up his best fight, whether you agree with him or not, and then Michael Lowry just washed away any chance the government had of winning the moral high ground.
And I assume the one person in all of this who is delighted with all of it is Michael Lowry.
Of course he is, absolutely. And you kind of wonder what the full story is. You know, is there a backstory we don't know? Because Michael Lowry is getting away with an awful lot at the moment, really. And even his two fingers, the explanations in the various newspapers trying to say, you know, no, that wasn't the two fingers. You know,
he was beckoning him to sit down, I think was his explanation.
Down. He was asking him for the time. And then there was another one told to the journalist during the week as to, that was just a signal he was giving somebody. We all know two fingers are two fingers. You know, if you want the time,
it was
the
little smirk he gave when he did it as well. I mean, that really was the killer bit, was that the laughing. But look, they're all so entrenched now, I think, is the problem, that everyone's finding it very hard to walk back and find a compromise.
I've been very intrigued by how disgusted people are by the whole thing. I thought
it's unseemly,
Yeah, but people seem deeply resentful that it is going on. They think, I would have thought that when you look across the water and you see what's happening in America, people have thought, well, this is small beans. That doesn't seem to be the reaction. I think a lot of people are fairly disgusted by how far this has gone.
Yeah, because we should be worrying about what's going on across the water. We should be worrying about the housing targets and did the government lie to us during the election campaign. They're the sort of things that we should be talking about. And here we are spending our speaking time here talking about their speaking time.
Text saying, I think you're all being very unfair to Verona Murphy. I think she's in a very difficult situation. I'd say we're all in agreement that she's in a very difficult situation. John O'Donoghue, anonymous, you don't have to be a wallflower to get the job, but once you get the job, you just have to uphold the rules.
One point on that, though, the role has changed in recent years. So when John O'Donoghue got that, it was effectively in the old days a government appointment, the job of Ciarán Corrigan. The government had the majority. There was no secret vote. The whip was applied. And so in John O'Donoghue's day, Fianna Fáil would have put forward John O'Donoghue for that job and voted him in. That has changed now, that in the interest of giving the Parliament the power of picking a neutral chair, that's why the secret ballot came in. I can't remember exactly what year, but it was Enda Kenny was, I think, in opposition at the time.
53106, if you have a view, text saying you're making a mountain out of a molehill about the Lowry two fingers. Well, I think the two finger gesture is sort of symbolic of the wider issue,
yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly.
087-1400-106 as well on WhatsApp. Let us move on to the other story, which is getting a lot of coverage this weekend, which is the presidential election, the world's longest presidential election, because we've been talking about it now for several months and it's several months away. But Kevin Doyle's paper is reporting that Michael O'Leary is backing Mairead McGuinness to run for the presidency.
So nobody apart from Conor McGregor and Peter Casey have actually been brave enough to say, I want to be president yet. So we're kind of in the shadow boxing space still. But Michael O'Leary has kicked this on by basically, he did an interview with Margaret Donnelly, our farming editor, And somehow they got onto the presidency, and she asked him, had anyone approached him? Because everyone's getting approached, Anton. I mean, Valerie told me earlier, three parties have approached her. And the...
Well, Anton, I was going to ask you the same question. Have you been approached?
I've been offering myself to all and sundry, but nobody wants me, Valerie.
But everyone is saying they've been approached. Valerie hasn't approached now. Before that, before Valerie's name gets added to the list and she's hounded by the Sunday papers. But we're in that space. So Michael O'Leary has now proffered that he would like Mairead McGuinness, who it's long been rumoured wants a run at the presidency. She thinks she'd be the best of the names he's heard. But then, in the same breath, in true classic Michael O'Leary style, he then goes along to say, why would I want to be the president? It's the most useless office in the country. It's the most overpaid, useless office. And, you know, that bear in mind that Michael O'Leary is a man who talks about salary in the space of tens of millions, whereas the president talks about it in kind of a quarter of a million, 300,000 space. So he kind of dumps all over the job while saying, if anyone has to get it, it should be Mairead McGuinness. And a little dig at Michael D as well. She'd certainly be a significant upgrade on the incumbent.
Yeah, I thought Michael D was... I thought there was a law that had been passed that nobody was allowed to say anything critical. He mustn't have gotten the memo.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Quite the little snipe there. So, look, Mairead McGuinness obviously was contacted and she did not respond to confirm or deny whether she wants to run for presidency. So I think she is in that frame. But Fine Gael have a lot of people... who Fine Gael of all the parties actually have a lot of people whose names have been checked: Frances Fitzgerald, Heather Humphreys. So there's a
Sean Kelly.
Kelly has declared an interest as well. So there's,
and presumably it's whoever gets the nomination that's the game over for the rest of them. There is no route for any other Fine Gael gene pool candidate.
Yeah, no. The party, if there are multiple candidates, the party will have a selection convention. They will pick one and back that one then to the hilt.
Michael O'Leary also said, I have a real job. I don't want a makey-uppy job, even if it pays you whatever it is, 250 or 300 grand. Is he right about it being a makey-uppy job?
Oh, no, I don't think he is. I think it's a very important job. And I think Michael D has
really
done a very good job. I do, yes. I think you need a figurehead there who's not connected with politics and who can go and express what Ireland is all about, who can be a figurehead for the culture, the language, the people of Ireland, and who can spread that message throughout the world. And I mean, Michael D is a poet himself. He's taken very seriously as a writer and a poet. And I think that reflects very, very well on Ireland. He's also been willing to get out there, out of the Oris, and travel and meet people, as some of our earlier presidents, of course, weren't able to do.
If we didn't have a president, how would we know? What aspect of the nation would be impacted by the absence of somebody in the audience?
We would all be impacted, Anton, because if we have a good president reflecting Irish values, then it really, it reflects back on us. This is a good thing. Michael D does a tremendous PR job for the country for very little money, really. I mean, even his wolfhounds are famous. They have their own web pages and everything. But what I was thinking
in
was...
In the defence, I think they're Bearnaise Mountain Dogs. Yeah. But let's not
speak. Oh, are they? What did I say? Wolfhound. Sorry, Wolfhound.
No, a Wolfhound would be even more entertaining because of its scale. He is pretty much the second largest dog, a two Wolfhound. But yeah, I think they're Bearnaise Mountain.
Well, they're lovely dogs anyway. They are. Nice. But I do think it is a real job, seriously. But I think we shouldn't be trying to put too much into what it is. You know, it's not a political job. It's a job where he represents Ireland. But I think one of the worrying things that comes out this morning in the Irish Times, they're talking about Conor McGregor running for president. And remember, he is Donald Trump's favourite Irishman. And they carried out a little survey of councillors, 190 councillors, because he would need four local authorities to nominate him before he could get on the ballot paper, or 20 members of the Dáil nominating him. So anyway, they spoke to 190 councillors and none of them would support McGregor. One said he hadn't made up his mind yet. But the other thing which the Times mentions this morning, which I think is very interesting, is that there is concern among county councillors that we could get pressure from the Trump administration to get him on the ballot paper.
Well, this is interesting because McGregor himself is saying that it was something that happened in the White House that has caused him to commit totally to politics.
You know, like I said, I've got two fights on the contract. I'm in negotiations. Last week, something happened to me. I went to the White House. And my country is in my, you know, my heart bleeds for my country right now. So there's a lot of stuff going on back home. I'm happy with what I've done. You know, there's something else for me that's in my gut right now. And that's kind of where I'm going. So we'll see. Greatness don't rush. And right now, Ireland is in my thoughts. And that's where I'm at.
The nation is in his thoughts. Will his thoughts convert into electability? Is there any prayer of him getting, what is it, four councils? Is that right?
Four councils. And we saw that.
20 Oireachtas members.
What is different last time? So last time we saw people like Peter Casey went the council route and got council nominations. But at that time, you might recall, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael weren't running candidates because Michael D was running, and they were like, we're not going to waste a load of money running against Michael D. So a lot of their councillors just kind of like abstained, or in the interest of democracy, let alternative independent candidates get on the ticket. This time, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael will run candidates. Sinn Féin will likely run a candidate, or at least back a candidate. So that closes a lot of the councils off because they have the majorities on those councils. So there is, I would say, close to nil chance of Conor McGregor even being on the ballot. But maybe that serves his purposes.
Why?
Because that then allows him to bang the drum of, which the Trump conspiracy theorists will love, of, I have been blocked, they have shut me out, the establishment, the mainstream, they don't want me telling the truth. So it speaks to the base that he's trying to create, I think, if he can do that. And I think that is probably what we see happening here.
We're going to see months of it, aren't we?
Yeah, and I wouldn't put anything past Donald Trump. I really wouldn't. I mean, he's interfered in everything.
He can't change our constitution, though.
No, but look, what about poor Greenland? He's trying to take over Greenland. No, I mean, the man is a liability. And this is something he could take on board. I mean, why would he invite Conor McGregor to the White House for Patrick's Day? Even Micheál Martin wasn't in there on Patrick's Day. I mean, he's something up his sleeve. And it could be something like this. You know,
but
I'll drop
the tariff. Surely it is enough if it just creates more of the culture wars that are so unsettling in countries around the world. Isn't that enough? Isn't that the objective?
No, I don't think so. I think this is quite dangerous, actually. Well, because
spare a thought for Eamon de Valera. Wasn't he very farsighted writing the constitution to head off this 100 years ago?
I never thought we would get the sentence spare a thought for Eamon de Valera on the show. In other news, the
before we move on, Anton, we have to, are you ruling yourself out? You haven't clarified.
I'm still looking within my heart to see if the nation.
This is tomorrow's headline.
Yeah. I'm looking for a Sunday Independent exclusive here.
Exactly, yeah.
Savage president.
I will not let my utter unelectability dissuade me from throwing my name in the ring. The front page of the Irish Examiner: online space is no Wild West. Harris vows to enforce age verification steps. And oddly, this is linked in one way to what he said during the week about adolescence, the TV show, which has had such an impact. But the thing of the capacity for young people to be influenced negatively by social media, he is now suggesting that he's going to legislate the social media giants into real age verification. Has he got the smallest chance?
Well, my answer to that, Anton, is, well, get on with it, because we've been talking about it. This isn't something that came up on the back of adolescence. Adolescence has caught a moment, it's caught a wave. I mean, the coverage around it is in all the papers again. I think it's the third weekend in a row that there's just endless think pieces written about the show. And it's a really good show. But this idea that we're going to bring in age verifications, that adolescence has made the tarnished and more determined than ever, he says. But we knew all these problems last week. You know, I just think they haven't moved. We keep seeing the era of self-regulation is over. That's another quote that's just trotted out every 6 months. And nothing has changed. We are no clearer to getting any of that safeguards in place. So to be honest, I just kind of throw my hands up now when I read this stuff, because nobody has done anything about it.
But do we have the power to do anything about it? Have we got the power to influence how Meta or X or any of the large platforms handle their operations?
Well, I think that would be the argument the government would put forward, is that these things have to happen at a European level. We see the US is against regulation. These are largely American companies we're talking about, albeit TikTok is Chinese, obviously. So things have to happen at a European level, but the era of regulation is actually being walked back on the back of the Trump administration. So it's actually getting harder now, probably, for Europe to push forward on that agenda. But, you know, we ban kids from drinking alcohol. We ban kids from smoking. We're bringing in laws around vaping. So the truth of it is, social media is the Wild West, because there is nothing there to stop, to protect kids on any of this stuff.
He's quoted as saying, Simon Harris, there is no escaping the stark reality that we are now seeing an alarming trend where young boys are being drawn into online spaces dominated by self-proclaimed alpha male influencers. They exploit insecurities and reinforce outdated and dangerous narratives. The result is that a generation of boys struggle to form healthy relationships. He may be right, but what can he do about it?
Yeah. Well, he's going to have to do something. I mean, he's written this article inside the Examiner himself. And I think maybe it's just hit him because it says, as a parent of two young children who are still, I hope, some years from asking me for a smartphone, I found the adolescence compelling, harrowing and deeply moving. But he says the era of self-regulation is over. And we know it is because it's self-regulation has not worked in any aspect of social media. But he's going to have to get real. Do something about it. I mean, the only thing the government really has done is to produce those very expensive sleeves for mobile phones for schools to lock them away. Mm. They didn't need expensive sleeves. They could just put them in a box. Mm. But Simon Harris is going to have to take this seriously. He's going to have to bring it to Europe and Meta, anywhere else that we can have a voice. And we can but have
it
a becomes, voice.
It will be, therefore become another battleground with the US, won't
yeah.
it?
It will, of course it will, yeah. But we're going to have to think about Ireland in this instance and what we can do for our own kids.
But whether you loved it or, dare I say, hated it, the hate speech legislation, which the government lost a lot of capital on in the last administration, that was opposed by Musk and by others and they eventually watered it down. So that's This is going to face even more opposition because it directly impacts the likes of Musk. So, like, it's not a thing that they just draw up legislation.
And it goes to the heart of that culture war thing where he's talking about alpha male influencers. We have seen now Andrew Tate be welcomed into America very publicly by the current administration. If you're willing to nail your colours to that mast, how you're going to stand over Europe actually taking a stand against social media influencers like that, it's hard to see.
Yeah, no, it is. So, like, this isn't something they're going to do in 6 months is the reality of it. So the era of self-regulation is not over because until there is a law in place that says otherwise, and not just in place but enforced, well then self-regulation continues and the truth about self-regulation, sure they're getting rid of moderators, a lot of the social media companies. So they're actually, this is going backwards. It's not going forwards.
Bad news, Valerie Tech saying, I do not like Michael D. His views do not represent mine. I'll be glad when he was gone. I'd love to see Mairead McGuinness run.
Okay.
Another, the Taoiseach and Tánaiste represent Ireland. The power and influence lies with them. They get paid well. Why pay a huge sum to someone who does nothing but cut ribbons? Bad economics. Give that money to a homeless charity instead.
Just different opinions. We have to respect all opinions.
That's because you have a vested interest because you're running for the job, Valerie.
Well, I'll see you on the ballot paper.
Valerie Cox, author, journalist, and Kevin Doyle, executive editor of the Irish Independent. Thank you both very much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.